happen, we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hopp.
I'm Ann Northrup, and thank you to the lovely and talented Chris Cooper for filling in for me last week.
Great job, Chris. We come to you on a very sad week for the Republic, and we're going to discuss the legacy of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She was obviously a giant in the cause of women's rights, LGBT rights, and equal justice for all.
And we'll ask what a sixth conservative justice, which is, of course, who we're expecting, means for us and what's to be done about it.
And what's to be done about Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, who has threatened to withhold funding to schools that treat transgender students fairly.
More shameless, relentless action. But the U.S. House has passed an LGBT inclusive bill unanimously for the first time.
People must be asleep at the wheel there. The 2020 census deadline is now on Halloween, but we have their updated estimates of same-sex households, couple households, in the U.S. now.
We will celebrate the life of gay legal pioneer Paris Baldacci, who died this week.
And we're going to give you the LGBT angles on the Emmy Awards.
And we will celebrate the fact that Saturday Night Live has hired a black lesbian cast member.
My sister, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you start.
Well, sister in the sense that we're all brothers and sisters, as you like to say. It's a tragedy. It's not an unexpected tragedy. It's all playing out as we feared it would. One thing that I think it's important to remember about her is what an activist she was before she was on the court and how hard she had to fight for her status as a professional, coming out of Harvard Law School and no one wanting to hire her, fighting for her position, paid less than the men she worked with, and just taking up the cause of equality and fighting like crazy for years and years. And the fact that such an activist would end up on the Supreme Court was actually quite stunning to those of us who had followed her career for decades before she was appointed.
Right. Justice Roberts today at the service that they had at the Supreme Court said women are now the majority in the law schools. And of course,
well, that's been true. That's been true for a while. But when she went to Harvard, she was one of only nine women in a class of hundreds of men. And I remember when I was in college and in the late 60s and she was in law school 15 years before that, at least. Classmates were applying to law schools, and even then it was considered difficult and unusual for women to go to law school, and all of them had to really fight for a place.
Right. She argued so many cases on sex discrimination. And by the way, she's pretty much the one who came up with the idea of calling it gender discrimination. Her secretary in the office was typing up a brief and said, Sex, what are you doing? You know, this is going to freak people out. And so she's thought about it, and she said she started to refer to gender discrimination.
Well, she also came up with the strategy of basing a lot of these cases on discrimination against men for their gender. And I remember years ago when we were reporting a news item of a gay bar, I think in Florida, that had fired a straight employee. And we thought, man, this is genius. We have got to get a lot of gay organizations to fire straight people so that people will pass laws against sexual orientation discrimination. And that is exactly the strategy that she, in fact, invented long before that.
Her most her big initial case, which really was the breakthrough, was on behalf of a man whose wife had died, leaving him with their baby. And he wanted the Social Security benefit for the baby. But the benefit from Social Security was called the mother's benefit. And she went before the court and she all the way to the Supreme Court. And she won that case 8-1 at the Supreme Court.
Her devotion was to equality in all things. And in fact, that was her objection to the Roe v. Wade case. She thought it was wrongly decided on privacy grounds. She said it should have been decided on equal protection grounds.
And pretty much said so in her confirmation hearing. She was open about that when she was appointed by President Clinton in 1993.
And she didn't like the politics of it either. She thought that by the court making any decision, it was preempting the political advance of reproductive rights and was setting it up as a target for the right wing, which in fact it became. Now, whether or not we could have gotten to full equal reproductive rights without Roe v. Wade, who knows? But that gave some people in the women's movement a little pause about supporting her.
I love the way she thought of herself as a teacher to the court when she argued before them. And she added, a kindergarten teacher. She made things as basic as possible. I mean, she didn't, you know, she wasn't trying to be snarky or anything, but she just took them through this and brought them along. And as a justice, she also followed the example of Justice Thurgood Marshall in only taking cases on the court that would build the foundation for equal justice.
Yeah, and she was the most progressive justice ever on LGBT rights and sex discrimination. She and Thurgood Marshall really were the two activists who ended up on the court.
She was the last civil rights activist to be appointed to the court. I mean, we can say nice things about some of the other justices and their records, but they were not civil rights activists. And I want to take you back to 1971. We had never had a woman on the court. And Richard Nixon started to think about that because he was facing re-election. And Richard Nixon was always aware of his left flank. He wanted, you know, that's why he started the EPA and gave so much money to the art funding for the arts and things like that. And he thought about it. And
he lost a couple of his nominations.
They were rejected because they were racist dogs.
And one of them was described as, I think, mediocre. And then the response was, well, what's wrong with having mediocre people represented on the Supreme Court?
That was Carswell. And then the other one was Haynesworth. What? Yeah, they were famously rejected. So, but he contemplated it and he was discussing it. We have a lot of Nixon on tape. And, you know, he said things like, I'm not for women, frankly, in any job. Thank God I don't have any in the cabinet. He said they shouldn't even be allowed to vote. He said these things.
Yep.
But he still thought about naming a woman. And then the Chief Justice, Warren Burger, also anti-sodomy, by the way, came to him and said, if you appoint a woman, I'm going to resign from the court. I'm not going to stay here.
I would call that a missed opportunity.
But that's where we were in 1971. And we didn't get, we didn't get a woman justice until Ronald Reagan, Sandra Day O'Connor, 86, around then. She was there for the sodomy decision in 86, and she voted against us. And then she switched, as justices can. They can overturn precedents in 2003. In the
maybe Ruth convinced her to switch because they became great friends.
She became friends with everybody, famously with Scalia.
Well, I was quite moved by the picture of her coffin at the Supreme Court this morning as we were taping. it's bathed in a purple light. I'm not sure what that's about. Maybe just the
everybody was there. All the justices were there. All the clerks, all the past clerks, they were all standing outside. It was just extremely moving. I'm going to cry if I think about it too much because, you know, it's a tremendous loss. I do want to say I do have a piece of anger at her for not resigning during the Obama administration early on. I mean, she did say at one point, she said, there will be a president after this one, and I'm hopeful that the president will be a fine president. Well, here's what happens when you don't have a fine person making appointments.
Yeah, but that was, you know, that was 10 years ago before the midterm elections in 2010 when the Republicans took over the Senate.
Yeah. No, they didn't get the Senate back in 2010. They got the House back. I'm not going to belabor this too much, but she had her second cancer diagnosis in 2009. And at that point, Obama had a 60 vote majority in the Senate. And, you know, she was appointed at 60. And a lot of people were telling Clinton, don't appoint somebody so old. And she certainly lasted 27 years. And, you know, good for her. But, you know, Sandra Day O'Connor is still alive. She's 90. You know, she stepped down.
Maybe she should be reappointed.
Fine with me.
Well, I can certainly regret a scenario where she didn't resign, you know, where she could have resigned. But it's hard to give up that job when that's the dream. And when you think in the midst of a Democratic administration that Hillary will be next. And then by the time you it's too late, it's too late.
Yes. She thought Trump was a joke. She made disparaging comments about him publicly. And, you know, he's the president. But I mean, let's look at her legacy. The right to sign a mortgage without a man, the right to have a bank account without a male co-signer. These were her cases. These were cases as a lawyer. The right to sue for discrimination based on gender. The right for women to be pregnant and have kids and still work. Women in military combat. That goes into her as a justice. You know, women couldn't even get credit if they made more than their husbands. This is the world, I mean, that you and I grew up in. I want to say something. I had to look this up. There has not been a Democrat appointed Chief Justice, I'm going to be 67 next month, in my lifetime. Now, we still got some decent decisions, but, you know, overall, it has been a conservative court for our lives, basically, even though, you know, desegregation, all these kinds of decisions, there used to be a lot of decent Republican judges. A lot of them even moved to the left when they got on the court.
But, I was listening to a discussion of how Brown v. Board of Education may be on the chopping block.
And that was a 9-0 decision by the Supreme Court. But, Scalia used to call it, oh, you're waving the bloody flag of Brown.
Yeah, well, everything's up for grabs in a new administration.
Everything's up for grabs.
Let's just remember a taste of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. There were a couple of movies in the last few years, one a documentary, one a docudrama with people playing her. But the documentary trailer we have, let's take a look at a couple of minutes.
I ask no favor for my sex. All I ask of our brethren is that they take their feet off our necks.
We welcome today Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
She's become such an icon.
Would you mind signing this copy?
I am 84 years old and everyone wants to take a picture with me.
Notorious RBG. Yeah.
When you come right down to it, the closest thing to a superhero I know.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg changed the way the world is for American women.
I became a lawyer when women were not wanted by the legal profession.
thousands of state and federal laws discriminated on the basis of gender. She was following in the footsteps of the battle for racial equality. She wanted equal protection for women.
Men and women are persons of equal dignity, and they should count equally before the law.
She captured for the male members of the court what it was like to be a second-class citizen.
The point is that the discriminatory line almost inevitably hurts women.
I did see myself as kind of a kindergarten teacher in those days because the judges didn't think sex discrimination existed.
I have had the great good fortune to share life with a partner truly extraordinary for his generation.
He was the first boy I ever knew who cared that I had a brain.
She is a center of power on and off the court.
Every time Justice Ginsburg wrote a dissent, the internet would explode.
I came up with a couple slogans. You can't spell truth without Ruth.
I surely would not be in this room today without the determined efforts of men and women who kept dreams alive.
Wow.
I've heard that she does 20 push-ups three times a week or something. I mean, we can't even get off the floor. We can't even get down to the floor.
We're not much ahead of that.
She was a beloved pop figure, you know, and you felt, you know, because she was so embraced, and look at the way she's being embraced. She's going to be the first woman ever to lie in state in the Capitol. I mean, the first time ever. That's history. Everybody's behind her. But but you know, we're winning the pop culture wars, but we're losing power. I don't think our side is focused enough on holding power, on getting power.
Well, we've abdicated it. We're trying desperately to get some back this fall. I just want to note that she did perform same-sex weddings, including at the Supreme Court. We have a picture of that. I hope we can't.
Ralph Pellecchio and Dr. James Carter Wernz. I mean, Kagan and I think Sotomayor also performed same-sex weddings. Clarence Thomas, by the way, in contrast, officiated at the Supreme Court of the third wedding of Rush Limbaugh to his aerobics instructor. That one, that indissoluble marriage did not last. He's now on his fourth. And yes, that is snarky.
All right, so let's look ahead now. Post-Ruth.
Yeah.
Not looking good. First of all, the potential nominees are pretty heinous. Amy Coney Barrett, who's been waiting in the wings for some years now as a favorite of the extreme right wing, seems to be the favorite.
She's an anti-abortion activist. She affiliates with anti-abortion groups. She's an acolyte of Scalia, professor of law at Notre Dame. She'd be the sixth Roman Catholic if confirmed. Not all of them are conservative. You know, I think Senator Feinstein clumsily questioned her about her Catholic faith and set off a firestorm. That's not the kind of questioning that we want. You know, the dogma seems to be strong in you. You know, it was awkward. She favors gun ownership for convicted felons.
But not voting.
She wrote a decision making it easier for students accused of sexual assault to challenge the university's handling of their cases. She's opposed court rulings striking down restrictions on abortion. She signed a letter to the Catholic bishops affirming the value of life from conception to death, and that family and marriage are founded on the indissoluble commitment of a man and a woman.
Now, I was interested to see that the New York Times did a profile of her and of the other top rumored nominee, Barbara Lagoa. Both these profiles were pretty mild and were purporting to say that either one of them would be, you know, appropriately judicious, and did not paint either one of them as an extremist.
Yeah. That's like the people on MSNBC, the Never Trumpers, who said, William Barr is an institutionalist. This is a good pick.
Yeah, well, then they apologized.
Oh, well, Also, Barrett is active in a Catholic charismatic group called People of Praise, where females' wives were referred to as handmaids, and the husbands, of course, as heads. And this is this kind of group. There's another one that inspired Margaret Atwood to write The Handmaid's Tale. But Margaret Atwood held off on that for 3 years after coming up with the idea, saying she thought it was too crazy.
Well, to me, the core principle of that group that's concerning is that they believe that wives should be subservient to their husbands. And they also believe in sex only in heterosexual marriage, that homosexuality is a sin. And these are the kinds of things that should be in the context of decisions, I guess, in cases, should be asked about.
And the states, a few states still have sodomy laws on their books, which could be reinstated if the court says it's okay for states to ban sodomy again. Well, and then the marriage laws, if she were to join a majority saying the states have the right to regulate marriage the way they want, that they could be. Lots of states have laws and constitutional amendments that have not been repealed against same-sex marriage.
So I think there's a pretty unanimous consensus that as things stand now, there is nothing the Democrats can do to overcome the Republican votes. One thing that I wonder about is whether she will be so outrageous in her hearings if she's questioned on these points that some of the Republicans will turn on her.
Well, she wasn't outrageous in her confirmation hearing for the federal court. She became a victim, and she was confirmed. And we didn't talk a lot about Barbara Lagoa. That looks like less likely, other than the fact that she's Cuban American and she's from Florida, which Trump needs, where the polls are tight. She's on the 11th Circuit. She, of course, made her name trying to keep Elian Gonzalez of the country away from his Cuban father. She was on that legal team, but she's so anti-worker. Reading these decisions she's overturned all kinds of precedents and ruling for business over workers. That concerns me deeply.
And even if John Roberts moves farther to the left, he has a lot of room to move. There is not another likely candidate. Well, maybe Gorsuch, if he who did one thing in our favor, but are we going to get?
For instance, on the Affordable Care Act, on the Affordable Care Act, which is going to be heard right after the election, with maybe with this justice, maybe not. Even if there were a 4-4 tie, it would go back to the court that, ruled against it. But, it was a bad Fifth Circuit decision. It all turns on severability. If we hold that the mandate for, is unconstitutional, does the whole law fall? And Kavanaugh apparently is into you don't get rid of the whole law, you do. So we don't know exactly what's going to happen with the Affordable Care Act. But a lot of bad decisions are going to follow in a 6-3 majority. A lot of bad decisions. So
Obamacare argument on November 10th and any possible litigation that comes out of the election is why they're so eager to have this installed before the election. But that's a big risk, because then they have all those swing state senators forced to vote for this nominee, which may bring out more Democrats to vote against them. The other thing is, if they succeed in confirming one of these women, right-wing women, before the election, then maybe the Republicans don't have as much incentive to vote, because they've accomplished what they set out to do.
Well, they will be playing up the fact that lots of people are now openly talking about what Andy Hum has advocated for years, which is expanding the court under the Judiciary Act. The Congress, simple majorities in both houses, well, when you get rid of the filibuster in the Senate, can amend the Judiciary Act. It hasn't been amended since the Carter years. The federal bench is really too small. I mean, they don't really have enough judges to handle the cases. So certainly expand the federal courts, because Trump now has appointed one quarter of the justices there, 187 of them, and soon a third of the Supreme Court, and expand the Supreme Court. That was changed frequently in the 19th century. It was up to 10 under Lincoln, down to 8 under Johnson, Andrew Johnson, and it was down to 8 under Mitch McConnell just in 2016. 8 is enough, as far as they were concerned, for a whole year, more than a year. So, you know, the number can be changed, and people will scream court packing. Let them scream. If we can expand it.
At the moment, that screaming is keeping every single Democrat from being willing to say publicly that they would expand the...
They don't have to say it publicly. They just have to do it the way the Republicans do it. The Republicans use every lever of power available to them, and we don't. And I'm going to get the sun out of my eyes here.
Okay. The other thing that might be up for grabs that could be helpful would be statehood for the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico, yes. Puerto Rico could go either way. They elect Republican governors down there. We don't know how that's going to go. But that's up to the people of Puerto Rico, I should think. And then, of course, the Congress.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Well, it's not. We're not feeling happy about any of this, and we're not optimistic about where we're going to end up with the court.
We're not happy about 200,000 COVID deaths, and this is apparently acceptable to a lot of Trump supporters. even though a lot of them are dying. What are we in? And of course, we're not happy about an Attorney General Barr designating New York City, Portland, and Seattle as anarchist jurisdictions that should be denied federal funds.
My favorite tweet about that was New York City is an anarchist jurisdiction, and yet alternate side parking is still in effect.
And they enforce it.
Yes.
By the way, did you hear Trump at his UN speech this week?
He threw in
decriminalization of homosexuality, but of course also emphasized religious freedom, which is code for being allowed to discriminate against LGBTQ people.
And Pompeo is pushing that at the UN and trying to get them to re-endorse the Universal Declaration of Human Rights from 1948 or whenever it was.
Written by Eleanor Roosevelt.
Because it leaves out all this expansion of human rights to include sexual orientation and race and immigrants and all of that.
Well, the rabbi at the service this morning in the court for Justice Ginsburg, did talk about the expansion and how necessary it was from a constitution written in 1787. A Catholic group called Catholic Vote is spending $9.7 million in battleground states to defeat Catholic candidate Joe Biden. I don't want to leave this out. Another woman came forward to say Trump sexually assaulted her back in 97 at the U.S. Open Tennis, Amy Doris, now 48. And she's doing it because she has two 13-year-old twin daughters, and she wants them to stand up for themselves if and when things like this happen.
She was at the U.S. Open with a date, a guy who's a friend of Trump's, who took her to his office and to the U.S. Open. And they were all in Trump's box at the U.S. Open. And she says she went to the bathroom. When she came out, Trump was standing there and proceeded to assault her, stick his tongue down her throat, grope her whole body, just a few feet from her, but behind a partition from everybody who was there in the box. And that he continued to pursue her. That's his M.O.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
All right.
But going back to contraction of rights, we have our education secretary, Betsy DeVos, who has announced that she wants to withhold desegregation grant money from schools in Connecticut that have maintained their membership in a statewide athletic group that endorses students competing in sports in their daily lived gender identity.
This must be the administration's idea of a pitch for the black vote. Let's play people off each other.
It's some of these trans students are black, aren't they?
Sure, of course. But it's $18 million in funding that's at stake. And, you know, on top of that, of course, the Connecticut schools say we're just complying with Connecticut law.
Yes, non-discriminatory.
Senator Kelly Loeffler, who's in a tough fight for re-election in Georgia, introduced a bill this week in the Senate requiring genital exams for girls competing in school sports. Sounds rather invasive. I think that's kind of overreach that might upset people. Let's look at your genitals.
Well, also overreach is Kelly Loeffler's latest TV ad that says she is approvingly to the right of Attila the Hun.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does. And it has this whole...
Oh, I don't know too much about Attila's politics.
And has this skit of Attila the Hun making pronouncements. But, of course, the surrealism in everyday life fact this week is the voluntary online poll of Hornet app users.
I condemn Daniel Villarreal, who's a friend of mine, for writing a story about that in Newsweek. I condemn it.
Well, because it's nonsense. These polls are not real and don't mean anything. And it's all self-reporting. But here's what I will say about it. While this found 45% of gay men supporting Trump, a phony figure, the real figure, according to the story I read, was 34% of gay men supporting Trump.
Well,
which is a believable figure.
Here are the facts, and I respect our audience. Trump got 14% of the identifiable LGBT vote in 2016, the lowest ever for a Republican candidate. I mean, Bush got things like 25, 26% of LGBT votes back in those days. So Trump got 14%. And we're smart people. We know what he's been doing to us all these years. We're not going to fall for this. When they tout things like this, they're not expecting us to change our votes. They're hoping that some suburban women will change their votes.
That's true. Meanwhile, the Department of Labor has been ignoring a Freedom of Information request from the Washington Blade gay newspaper for documents about their elimination of non-discrimination rules covering sexual orientation and gender identity for federal contractors. And the Department of Labor just, forget it. We're not giving you anything. We're not even talking to you. We're not replying to your legal FOIA requests. So the Blade is now suing to get those documents.
I have a correction from last week. I have a couple, actually, but that'll be later in international news. All right. So we told you that Sarah McBride won her primary for Senate. She's out transgender. Will be the first out transgender senator there. And Eric Morrison won the House primary there. I think we might have said that they would be the first LGBT in the Delaware legislature. The first was an out lesbian, and a viewer told me about this, Karen Peterson, elected to the state Senate in 2002, came out in 2013, remained there until 2017. So thank you, Richard, for that. And Eric Morrison is a drag queen and defeated a homophobic incumbent in the primary with 61% of the vote for state representative.
Very good. Well, that's because we are everywhere and there are more and more of us. And we have some facts. As we said in the headlines, the census is still being counted and they've cut short the reporting time. So
The courts moved it to October 31st. So you've got until October 31st. And, you know, we'll give you the website that you go to fill out the census if you haven't. I can't believe the number of people who haven't filled it out yet, but there it is.
I mean, that's the way the world works. People are not paying attention. People think they're giving up information inappropriately. They don't believe in government anymore. And so they have no information about why the census is important. So they're not filling out the census.
And if you need information, it's important because that determines your representation in legislatures and federally and locally, in the House and in your state legislatures, and how much funding your area gets.
Yeah, these are real issues. So my2020census.gov is one place to go to fill out the census. So every 10 years they take this count and then they apportion legislatures and money and all that kind of stuff. But in between those 10 years, there's something called the American Community Survey that more frequently measures population statistics. And the latest report from them shows almost a million same-sex couple households. They're not counting LGBT people around the country. They're counting households where two people of the same gender report themselves as a couple, as partners. And over half of those now are married couples.
568,000 married same-sex couples, slightly more female couples than male couples. Same-sex married couples had a higher median income than opposite-sex couples.
Male
couples earned much more than female couples. The highest concentration of same-sex couples in the United States, by a long shot, is D.C., 2.4%, followed by Delaware at 1.3%. So not places like New York and California and things like that.
But again, these are just couples. They're not all LGBT people.
Right. And 16% of the same-sex married couples are interracial, which is double that for opposite-sex couples.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. By the way, Media Matters did a report this week that said cable and broadcast news covered anti-trans violence for 29 minutes in Pride Month and not for the rest of the summer. It just didn't become a story. You'll have to watch Gay USA if you want to know what's going on. In Cleveland, a trans inmate, Leah Day, D-A-Y-E, died in her cell amidst deplorable conditions. She was 28. Her mother found a letter complaining about the fact that you couldn't even eat the food, filthy cells, and she had been homeless at the time of incarceration. Heartbreaking.
Yes. In Kentucky, we're getting the news just this morning about Louisville and the very minor indictment of one police officer in the death of Breonna Taylor. I expect there will be a large reaction to that. But meanwhile, the Louisville City Council, by a vote of 24-1, did ban conversion therapy for minors. So that's one.
And the big news is that the U.S. House passed the National Suicide Hotline Designation Act that will allow everybody to dial 988 to reach the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. It passed by unanimous consent in the House, and it's the first LGBT inclusive bill that essentially passed unanimously. So I guess Trump still has to sign it, but I believe it passed the Senate, obviously, or they wouldn't have said that. Now, a 988 lifeline has already been approved by the FCC, including an integrated voice response option to help LGBT youth and other high-risk populations. But the bill notes that youth who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or queer, this is in the bill, are more than four times more likely to contemplate suicide than their peers. One in five LGBT youth and one in three trans youth have tried to take their lives.
And it's hard to switch topics from that. The American Chemical Society, a national organization, has adopted a new rule that authors of publications for them can change their name on the publication. This is aimed mostly at trans people, but anyone can change their name as an author of a publication without having to go through some long proof operation.
Speaking of chemicals, I read the New York Times Magazine article on Ed Buck, who lured African-American men into his apartment and pumped them full of meth and killed a bunch of them. What I learned from the story is that he was not a mega donor to the Democratic Party. That was something pumped up by Fox News. That these cases of this kind of death, you know, he's in jail. Awaiting trial, but they're hard to prove, apparently. His defense lawyer is Chris Darden, who was one of the prosecutors, African-American, in the OJ case.
We are sorry to hear of the death of Paris Baldacci, lawyer and professor of law at Cardozo University here in New York, died of cancer at 76. He taught LGBT law and was revered as a professor of that for many years. But he also litigated tenant rights for LGBT people here in New York.
He won the Brashi decision, which was a breakthrough in 89. We were all getting thrown out of our apartments if you know, your partner died and you weren't on the lease. But that case, which Tom Duane played a big role in as well, and a 1994 case extending rent control and stabilization to members of non-traditional families. And his scholarship was on meeting the challenge of unrepresented litigants. He started as a legal aid lawyer and ran a housing clinic and an LGBT clinic there. He survived by his husband, Andrew Dolkart. They were together for 37 years, who was a professor of historic preservation at Columbia and does the LGBT New York City History Project for us.
And some changing of the guard at a couple of major LGBT organizations. In Washington, the NGLTF, the National LGBTQ Task Force, which Ray Carey has run for
12 years, and she's been there for 17 years.
Thank you. And an old colleague of ours in youth work before that. She has announced she's resigning at the beginning of 2021, and her deputy executive director, Kiara Johnson, will take over and will be the first Black leader of the task force.
She's a bisexual, pansexual Black woman, long an advocate of LGBTQ rights and reproductive rights in her
background. She ran a reproductive rights organization. Now, it used to be Choice, U.S. Choice something, now Urge, and ran that for 10 years and then came over to the task force about 3 years ago. On the board and then deputy executive director. So everyone's very excited about her taking over in February of 2021.
And Lori Green is retiring from the Los Angeles LGBT Center after 25 years in July. She's going to step down.
No, in 2022.
Oh, is it that late?
Yes.
Sorry. July
23rd. It'll be a long glide path.
The search is under. Well, the search is underway for a new CEO. This organization is the largest of any of ours in the country. It's got 800 employees and has multiple sites, so it's a big deal.
And multiple services. And she's been in and out of there over the years. She's done other stuff too, but she's always gone back there, so this is a big deal for her retiring. International news.
Yeah.
We have a date for the Privy Council to hear the Bermuda marriage case, February 3rd and 4th. The majority, this has been going on so long that the majority of people in Bermuda now approve same-sex marriage.
All right. And a clarification on Barbados, because the stories were unclear when we reported last week. The government will recognize same-sex civil unions, but subject marriage equality to a referendum. They're also moving to become a republic and dump the queen. A reporter, a nasty reporter, asked Mia Motley, the prime minister, are people in Barbados going to be allowed to be gay here? And she said, what the hell are you talking about? You know, I mean, it was kind of obnoxious. And he acted like, well, we have total acceptance in the United Kingdom. Well, we may have laws, but you don't have total acceptance.
Couple of marriage and family cases out of China. In Hong Kong, a court decision says they will not recognize marriages, same-sex marriages performed elsewhere in other jurisdictions where they are recognized. They are not recognized in Hong Kong. But the court said in a separate case said a gay partner can inherit his partner's estate. But what the court said was this is not a blanket approval of same-sex relationships. You have to litigate the rights of same-sex couples item by item by item. How many did we find when we were trying to legalize same-sex marriage here? Weren't there something like 1,700 enumerated rights of marriage? So that's a lot of court cases coming up in Hong Kong. And in the rest of China, another court has decided against a lesbian mother who was in a custody battle with her ex. The lesbian mom who's suing for custody had given her eggs for implantation by in vitro. And then they were implanted in her partner who gave birth. And so she asserted a parental right. They're her eggs. It's half her child. And the one who gave birth doesn't have any genetic connection to the child. But the court says parental relationship cannot be legally established solely on the basis of the child having the plaintiff's genes. What you need is the emotional attachment formed during months of pregnancy and the ordeal of childbirth. So since she didn't give birth to the child, because only one of them could, she does not have any parental rights, even though the child is genetically half her.
They're telling her, adopt the kid.
Yes.
Adopt your kid.
Yeah, there's the answer.
Horrible report out of Iran on violence against LGBTI people. 6 in 10 have been assaulted by their family members. Almost half have been sexually assaulted in public. Now, this was an online survey, okay? But a statistic, I mean, it's really a terrible, horrible situation. I read in this report, can this be true, that 4,000 to 6,000 gay men and women have been executed since the Iranian Revolution in 1979? That's what they're saying.
Well, that's 40 years, so.
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying.
We won't be visiting soon.
Well, how many people have been abused here? We're getting shorter on time, and we have a lot to cover. In the UK, an employment court says non-binary and other sort of genderqueer people are covered by non-discrimination rules in the Equality Act.
The Pope made some what are being reported as positive noises about gay people to a sort of a parents of gays group there. Don't fall for it. He hasn't changed a goddamn thing about the way the church treats.
Yeah, but also in the UK, TikTok has apologized for censoring LGBT content and content about disabled people and overweight people. They say, we're really sorry. We really got that wrong. We were concerned about bullying. Nonetheless, we will follow local laws. So in Russia, for instance, we're still going to censor LGBT content because it's against the law there.
In the UK, members of parliament were offered a training against unconscious bias on race, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, and sex. 40 Tory MPs refused, accusing the House of Commons of pandering to the woke agenda. One said, I'd rather gouge my eyes out than go to this thing.
Trump.
The thing is, this is the party that rode to power accusing the Labour Party of anti-Semitism.
Well, the UK government has canceled a plan to allow transgender people to change their legal gender on their own reporting. They say you need a medical diagnosis. They are going to make it cheaper, but it's this whole right-wing fear of men, predatory men in women's bathrooms that made them take back the proposed law.
And in Poland, the European Parliament is adopting a report that is really going after them over all this anti-LGBT stuff and threatening for more sanctions on them for and lack of, you know, withholding funding for that.
And in Belize, the government has withdrawn an equal opportunity bill because protesters said it was legislating morality.
And just discussion about same-sex marriage and relationships is heating up in the Cayman Islands. So a Christian group was caught calling for LGBTQ people to be hanged, but in a loving way.
In Germany, the new defense ministry report just put out talks about gay discrimination in the armed forces between 1955 and 2000, discharges, forced medical exams, assault. Some people tolerated gay people in the military, so they're going to put forward a bill for reparations, maybe.
And in India, trans activist Dr. Akai Padmashali has joined the Congress Party in the unit there in her state. First LGBT person to join the state's unit. The president there welcomed her. And she says this all started under Indira Gandhi giving benefits in the Congress Party to transgender people.
Good.
Under Indira.
Well, can we move to AIDS news?
Let's do.
All right. A terrible case out of Texarkana, Texas, where a family has now filed suit against a for-profit jail, which took their daughter, Holly Burlow Austin, and abused her, neglected her, deprived her of medicines, HIV positive, to the point where she became blind in jail. Couldn't find the food and water that had been put in her cell. And then they discharged her just before she died so that they would not be held responsible for her death.
The last 48 hours amounted to torture.
It was. The whole thing was torture.
We've told you about the Berlin patient, the first guy to be cured of HIV, Timothy Ray Brown. He has had a recurrence of leukemia and is now in hospice care. His partner, Tim Hofgen, is at his side.
Very sad.
Oh, and in Vietnam, the police raided a facility where used condoms were being 324,000 were being recycled and sold under unhygienic conditions. And apparently 3.3% of people in this country try to reuse condoms. The CDC says don't. I know you don't trust them anymore, but trust us, don't.
Well, speaking of trust, two new cases of gay men infected with HIV while on PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis, Truvada. Now, that's two cases out of however many hundreds of thousands.
One was adherent. The other might not have been adherent.
Well, the adherent guy was in Texas, and he's believed to have been infected by an extra strong, rare form of the virus that was highly resistant to drugs. And as I say, rare, but
look, when this COVID vaccine comes along, they're hoping it's 50% effective.
Exactly. And the other guy was in Hong Kong, less adherent, as you say. So that may be the answer to him. And it took him a while to test positive because he did have enough drugs in his system to suppress the virus for a while before he tested positive.
Good news. Ellen DeGeneres is back. She says in her opening monologue, if you're thinking of changing your title to the kind lady, don't do it.
She apologized for her not reining in her staff misbehavior and then gave away a lot of 62-inch TVs to members of the audience. I have a couple of recommendations. I have caught up in a swift way with Hollywood on Netflix, the Ryan Murphy. Huh?
You recommend Hollywood?
I do.
I must publicly disagree, but go ahead.
We can't agree on everything. I mean, it's a fantasy. It's silly, but it's I found it entertaining. And then Ratched, which
also
got
from Ryan Murphy.
Yes. Got very mediocre reviews. I found it so much better than I expected. Sarah Paulson and Cynthia Nixon, lesbians playing lesbians. Unbelievable. And Sharon Stone and Judy Davis and other lesbian patients in the mental hospital. And it's so gorgeous and luxurious in its sets and costumes and everything.
I will check it out.
It's I found it, I mean, it like Hollywood, it jumps the shark at some point. It gets a little over the top. And it's quite violent. You may not appreciate the violence, but it's sort of cartoon violence. I mean, it's a show after all. But I found it a lot more entertaining than I expected.
But since this is Bisexual Awareness Week, I will make a correction. Cynthia Nixon is bisexual. And the actor Francis Arnaud has come out as bisexual. And today, as I say, is Bisexual Awareness Day. He's known for his work in The Borgias and Midnight in Texas. And we're going to put an article in our email from him because he really spoke well of this.
He did. He was amazingly eloquent about and talked about how scary it is to give up privilege, which by coming out when you are perceived as straight because you have a female partner at some point.
I'll send you the whole thing. He says, I'm not trying to look edgy. I'm not disloyal. I'm not ashamed. I'm not invisible. And he appeared in an episode of Schitt's Creek in 2017. And maybe we should talk about the Emmys.
Yes, because that show just swept the Emmy categories. And I have never watched it.
Nor I, but I will now.
Well, I understand it's quite gay. And Daniel Levy, son of, it'll come to us. We're old. But he won. He is gay and he won best supporting actor for the show and for writing and maybe other things. But that was the big winner at the Emmys. Along with Watchmen, which I enjoyed very much on HBO, and especially the opening episodes that recreate the 1921 massacre of the black community in Tulsa.
And RuPaul's Drag Race is still backing in the awards. And Ru dedicated their award to the show's queen, Chichi Devane,
yes,
who has passed away.
Well, Rue won the Best Reality Host Award for the fifth time and won Best Competition Show. Also, Cherry Jones picked up an Emmy for Best Guest Actor in Succession. Or Unorthodox, which I have yet to watch on Netflix. I think that's next on my list, about the lesbian Orthodox Jewish woman who leaves the sect and comes out, won Best Director of a limited series.
And Tyler Perry won the Governor's Award, and he spoke up for LGBTQ folks in his speech.
I thought you were going to tell me he came out.
No. Go ahead.
Queer Eye won Best Structured Reality Show. Bad Education won Best TV Movie, and Joe Exotic showed up in the person of David Spade. Saturday Night Live has hired a black lesbian actor-writer, Punky Johnson, and the tennis...
I'll include a link to her work, but we can't run it on this show because it's filthy.
The Fed Cup in tennis has been renamed the Billie Jean King Cup. That's a nice thing.
Yes.
And Newfest.
And on Love Island, the hetero hookup hour on CBS, they've dumped a contestant, Noah Purvis, because he turns out to be a gay male porn star. And he does straight porn as well on the Corbin Fisher site. Fans are furious.
Well, they just erased him. Check out newfest.org for the rundown of all the movies coming up in October. See you next week.
Bye.